This is Conversations in Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, the White House has been telegraphing the appointment of Don Berwick for a number of weeks, and the president made a recess appointment, putting Dr. Berwick in as the head of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. This appointment has caused some consternation on both sides of the aisle, but Dr. Berwick has many other supporters throughout the industry. Just so our listeners will know, recess appointments are in the purview of the president. When Congress is out of session, the president has the ability to do that, and the appointment lasts through the president's term. Margaret, thoughts on the appointment of Dr. Berwick?
I think it's a great idea. He certainly enjoys the support of almost the entire healthcare community. And I would have preferred that it was done through the usual process. I think the country would have benefited from those open hearings. But, you know, they were likely to be long and protracted and largely about whether or not he really believes in rationing healthcare. That position has been unfilled for years at this point. It was just too large and too important to let it go unfilled any longer. There's too much to do.
And, you know, they'll hear him soon as he'll be up on the Hill testifying, and they can ask him all the questions that they like at that time.
That's right. But you know, there was a second big development, and that's that the Office of the National Coordinator has finally released the long-awaited definition of meaningful use of electronic health records.
What is that term, meaningful use? I know it's about electronic health records, and I know it's important to the industry, and I think there's been a lot of opaqueness around that phrase. Can you illuminate our listeners on that?
Right. It's the kind of phrase that's clear as mud to those people now in healthcare. But a couple of important points. One, this is legislation which took recovery fund monies and said we will reimburse practices across the country. And importantly, Mark, not just physicians, but dentists, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, physician assistants. We will reimburse practices for the cost of implementing electronic health records. But these can't be electronic health records that merely turn the paper chart into an electronic chart. Meaningful use means that you are able to communicate with other sources of care, exchange information, to do that in a secure and private environment, and to really thus improve on care coordination and quality and safety. And I thought it was particularly interesting that meaningful use now includes that we report on specific quality measures. They did not assign that list to people. They provide a long menu so a practice can select which ones are most important to their practice. But I think that's all good news.
And we have a fusion of meaningful use in terms of technology and data today. Our guest is Todd Park, Chief Technology Officer for the Department of Health and Human Services, who joins us today. Todd's been working to develop technologies and services to help our healthcare system work to its optimal potential. There's a lot going on over at HHS with Todd spearheading new healthcare innovations. We've discussed the new healthcare website, healthcare.gov, the opening government initiative, where HHS is making vast stores of data available. And we'll hear from Todd today as he talks about it. He's quite enthusiastic about liberating data.
And I think we'll hear the expression super cool more often from Todd than we generally hear from senior federal officials. No matter what the story, hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get the show regularly downloaded or visit us at chcradio.com. We'd like to announce, too, we've doubled our broadcasting power of the last 20 years or so here at Westview. We're now broadcasting at 3,000 watts.
Let us know if you have feedback about that or anything else you've heard on the show. Email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Todd Park, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid and the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology announced the long-awaited rules that healthcare organizations must adhere to if they are to qualify for the financial incentives under Medicare and Medicaid's meaningful use of electronic health records. The Obama administration believes the implementation of this technology will deliver better care and give consumers more control over their healthcare, not to mention lower costs. Dr. David Blumenthal, the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, has full confidence that this will be the future for healthcare professionals and will successfully lead our healthcare system into the 21st century.
I firmly believe that it is just a matter of time before clinicians and hospitals become the leaders of this effort to improve information systems in the United States. And the reason is that using information is a core clinical competency for professionals in healthcare. We are only as good in treating patients as the information we have.
The final rule defines meaningful use and clarifies the requirements clinicians must satisfy to earn the financial incentives for adopting electronic health records. Dr. Donald Berwick, who was just sworn in on Monday as the new administrator for CMS, puts it into perspective.
I really like the phrase meaningful use, the word meaningful. I've been thinking, well, meaningful to whom? It's meaningful to the care, meaningful to the patients, and meaningful to the people who help the patient. I know about that a lot from my work in the past 20 years trying to improve healthcare, watching hospitals and physicians and nurses and the communities that get to use modernized technology.
The final rule was accompanied by a second rule which set standards, implementation specifications, and certification criteria for EHR technology in an effort to help clinicians and hospitals ensure their purchases will deliver the value the rule is designed to drive. Overall, the final rule gives eligible health professionals and hospitals greater flexibility in meeting meaningful use. Last year's Recovery Act authorized CMS to provide a reimbursement incentive for physician and hospital providers who demonstrate the meaningful use of an electronic health record. The incentive payments, ranging from $44,000 to $64,000 per physician over 5 years, begin in 2011 and gradually phase down before penalties for non-EHR use are applied in 2015. The final rule announcement comes right after two recently issued HHS rules. At the end of June, ONC published a final rule establishing a temporary certification program for health information technology. And last week, the Office for Civil Rights announced a proposed rule that would strengthen and expand privacy, security, and enforcement protections under the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996. As part of this process, HHS is establishing a nationwide network of regional extension centers to assist providers in adopting and using EHR technology in a meaningful way. Today on Conversations on Healthcare, we're exploring how technology can improve America's health. Even before healthcare reform was signed into law, the Department of Health and Human Services was working to advance the culture of innovation and create a community of collaborators. The department has been busy at work these last few months with a lot to show for it. Let's turn now to our interview with Todd Park, who can tell us more.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Todd Park, Chief Technology Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome, Todd. You come to the department in 2009. You bring a wealth of expertise in health and technology to this administration. You co-founded Athena Health and co-led its development into an organization recognized as innovative and socially oriented health information technology company. The Obama administration clearly is one that believes in the power of technology to improve the health of individuals, and also the role of data to empower communities to become healthier. Can you share with us just sort of the strategic priorities of your new office as Chief Technology Officer?
Absolutely. There are really three primary priorities that have emerged for my work and the work of the people I work with at HHS on technology and data and how it can help improve health. The first is what I'll call open government. The second is the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And the third is actually advancing a culture of innovation in HHS. So just very briefly, the first, open government, is in response to the President's directive to all federal agencies to become more transparent, participatory, and collaborative. So a key part of open government is something we're calling the Community Health Data Initiative, which is a new effort that we launched recently where HHS is basically publishing a ton of data online about the national, state, regional, and county level public health and healthcare performance, smoking rates, obesity rates, and determinants of health like access to healthy food, et cetera, basically encouraging innovators from across the country, public and private sector innovators, to take the data and turn it into super cool applications for consumers and for providers and for policymakers to make better decisions that can help improve health. So that's actually been very, very exciting. The second priority, which I'll just briefly talk about, is implementation of the Affordable Care Act. One of the latest pieces of work there that I've been involved with is the launch of healthcare.gov, which is a new consumer-oriented site that we launched on July 1st. That's the first site that enables consumers to search an inventory of both public and private health coverage options. Then the third priority is advancing a culture of innovation at HHS. And this is actually potentially the most fundamental priority, because it's really how we're achieving successes on the open government front and the implementation of the Affordable Care Act front. It's a top priority of the department to really mobilize the talent within the department and link it to talent outside the department to get exciting things done, like the Community Health Data Initiative and various aspects of implementation of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, we have watched and appreciated your passion and enthusiasm for each element of those, and we have questions and interest about each of them. But let me start, if I can, by picking up on the Community Health Data Initiative.
Sure.
We're an organization that, like tens of thousands of organizations around the country, submit data to the federal government, quite a bit of it. We're a federally qualified health center.
Uh-huh.
And we're particularly interested in the ability that the initiative holds as a promise to take all that massive amounts of data and make it readily accessible to help communities. And we watched the official launch. We're deeply impressed with the range of innovators and technology entrepreneurs who stepped up with contributions. We immediately went out and explored the Asthmopolis application, for instance, to help kids and adults with asthma. And it really seemed to represent a new social consciousness about the need and value of transparency in making data held by the federal government usable and accessible to the public. And where can we expect that to go beyond the Community Health Data Initiative?
Yes. So actually, we're now engaged in the next phase of the Community Health Data Initiative, which is very exciting. Everyone was very, very encouraged by, as you said, the explosion of innovation that we witnessed on June 2nd in terms of what people were able to do in a 90-day span since we released an initial set of data. So what we're actually planning to do is going forward, two things. One, HHS plans to release even more data. And do so on a continuous stream. I think one milestone that's very exciting is that in December of this year, we're going to be releasing the HHS Health Indicators Warehouse, which will be a new public website where you can spelunk to your heart's content a whole mass of data, an expanded set of data, national, state, regional, and county-level performance on public health and healthcare indicators and determinants of health. Included in the warehouse is actually going to be an inventory of proven interventions, proven programs that communities across the country have engaged in that have helped actually move the needle on indicators like smoking, which is also very exciting. And all this information will be updated on an ongoing basis. The warehouse website will allow all this data to be not just graphed and charted and sliced and diced, but actually downloaded for free. It'll be exposed through web services so that other applications and websites can hook into the data and automatically invoke it in the functions of their own websites and applications. And on top of that, we just got plans to release more and more data over time, including data that goes beyond just national, regional, local health performance, but also data that could help individuals and communities improve that performance. So, for example, later this year, we're going to be releasing in downloadable XML format data set of FDA drug, device, and food recalls, which could power a whole host of very innovative uses and applications.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that culture of innovation you were talking about before, and clearly you are not only a technologist, but you're in the liberation movement in some ways. I noticed the Google has the data liberation front, where engineers in Google are trying to free data and get it out there. And certainly you're engaged in data of the people, by the people, and for the people at the department. We're excited about that. And, you know, the innovation awards that you briefly touched on, is really trying to tap into the pulse of workers there. How are you stimulating, outside of the awards, what's the sort of on the ground cultural change that you're trying to bring to the hundreds of thousands of workers who work in the department around this this process of innovation and freeing of data?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. I mean, the thing that I and others are really trying to do is basically recognize and reward risk-taking and innovation as something that is fundamentally important to HHS, something that you actually would advance your career at HHS. You know, I think there are a ton of innovative people at HHS. You know, that's been my observation and experience thus far. I mean, you know, I haven't personally done the Community Health Data Initiative. I haven't personally built healthcare.gov. That was built. Those initiatives were built and driven by incredibly talented teams of people I found here. And my observation would be that, you know, if HHS can find a way, which we are doing more and more, to pull those teams of innovators together, to celebrate them, to arm them with the air cover and the path forward to be everything they can be, then HHS is capable of doing just amazing things in really short spans of time. Celebrating those people, making them rock stars, making other people want to be those people when they grow up, that's really, I think, the way to change the culture. It's not actually the right way to go to, you know, if we were to, for example, to add, you know, as the 87th criterion that we do people's appraisals on annually, and add the criterion to be innovative, right, that would not be the right way to go. The right way to go is instead to say, look, you know, if you're an innovator, you'll become a rock star, you'll do incredibly cool things for the world. We're going to encourage that. And make everyone else want to be like you.
You know, you've talked about healthcare.gov a couple of times, which was launched on July 1st. The site is certainly the first of its kind, offers consumers the unique opportunity to shop around for an insurance plan which best meets their needs. But this is not your grandmother's shopping around for health insurance. You've incorporated a Twitter feed to distribute information on policies and YouTube videos to explain the law's benefits. So what do you think the response has been so far? Have you been able to track the demographic of people who are looking at it? And do you see this as a really fundamentally kind of radically different way to engage people in the power of purchasing their health insurance?
We do. You know, we actually had a ton of consumer input that helped shape the creation of the site. We had 18 focus group discussions with about 73 different folks. Individuals who are insured and uninsured, small business owners, basically asking them what they'd want in a site like healthcare.gov. And what they said is that, you know, they wanted something that didn't resemble any traditional government site, one that was intelligible, understandable, was maniacally focused on the consumer, and that actually enabled them to navigate a very complicated insurance marketplace with ease, you know, in a way that was jargon-free and that really felt like the site was on the lookout for them. And that's exactly what we then endeavored to do. I think the best compliments that we've gotten are from consumers who basically say, you know, or consumer advocates who say, this looks nothing like a government website, you know, because it is truly consumer-oriented and is really easy to use and navigate. And one of the things we're actually very, very excited about is the fact that we've gotten a tremendous amount of input into the site going forward from these feedback bubbles, these yellow feedback bubbles we've distributed throughout the site, where we basically say, was this page useful to you, yes or no, and if no, or even if yes, what can we do to actually make it better? We've gotten a ton of feedback from users you know, through those bubbles, and we're already dialing that into what we plan to do with the website going forward.
Today we're speaking with Todd Park, Chief Technology Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services. You know, at our health center, we have a saying that anecdotes divide us and data unites us. And on healthcare.gov, you've really put together the right tools that allow people to compare data about quality of care of hospitals and other other providers. But it seems that to me that the limitation of the data is that it's only Medicare data, and that's a frustration generally at the state level and trying to measure and compare and improve safety and quality. What's your strategy to take that enthusiasm, that focus, that making efficient, effective, elegant use of data and get all payers in the states engaged in the same process?
To bring it full circle back to the Community Health Data Initiative, that's so exciting, is that in addition to HHS making commitments to publish data for public use, we've actually been approached by a growing number of private sector organizations that want to do the same thing. And that'll be wonderful because with more than just government provided data online, with data from the, you know, the commercial sector, et cetera, innovators will have a whole panoply of data to play with that they didn't have before in a way that's really easy to use and that they can turn into incredibly cool consumer apps, apps for doctors, apps for employers, applications for policymakers. And so I'm very excited to see not just what we'll do with healthcare.gov, but actually what the world will do in terms of creation of innovative apps using our data and the data of others.
You've already given us so much information about these innovations, but we'd like to ask our guests, and perhaps especially you, this question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I know a lot of people actually like to talk about the issues that we've got with healthcare and health in the U.S. and globally, and there are a lot of issues, but the thing that actually is even greater force in my mind is the wave of incredible people and incredible innovation energy being applied to solve those issues. It is actually impossible for me to articulate the full list in the time we have allotted of the people that inspire me, but it's an incredibly long list. Both actually in HHS, outside HHS, working in American health improvement, working in global health improvement. It's an astonishing tsunami of creative, mission-oriented, ingenious, results-oriented folks. And they're the reason why I think we're going to really make a huge amount of headway in the next decade on both national and global health issues. Why I'm so optimistic about our future.
We will follow your tweets, your blogs, your Facebook, and all other means of communication. And today we've been speaking with Todd Park, Chief Technology Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you so much for joining us today. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea focuses on a growing movement within the healthcare community to improve the patient's quality of care and safety by increasing their health literacy. According to a recent CDC study, 9 out of 10 adults struggle to follow typical medical advice. The main culprit, medical jargon and scientific terminology. Although most health experts call for material to be written at a 4th to 6th grade reading level, too often it's not, and even then, it may be too complex for the average patient. The result? Patients misunderstand their condition, incorrectly follow treatment regimens, or don't understand why they need to follow this advice. And these mistakes really add up. A 2007 University of Connecticut study estimated that the annual cost to the healthcare system of low health literacy, $238 billion. Several new programs have emerged to address the problem. One, from HealthWise, hosts an online discussion with newly diagnosed patients called a virtual conversation. The interactive program walks patients through a thorough but straightforward explanation of their diagnosis and treatment plan. The program uses plain English and explains any medical terminology with a degree of consistency that's hard for busy providers to make time for. HealthWise offers these virtual conversations for over a dozen medical conditions, from low back pain to diabetes to asthma. For instance, at the Center for Spine Wellness at St. Luke's Health System in Boise, Idaho, new patients are asked to use the virtual conversation program on back pain. By asking patients about their symptoms and assessing the individual's answers, the program discusses issues such as medication, the anatomy of the back, and strengthening exercises with the patient. The program owes its recently increased visibility and use in part to the new Federal Health Literacy Action Plan, which pushes for increasingly accessible medical language. By simplifying confusing language, programs like HealthWise are cutting costs, reducing medical errors, and improving quality of care across the country. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.